People's Tribune Radio is on the air. I'm your host, Mike Thornton. On today's program,
we are here not because we believe in a dream, but because we believe in a vision of what we have to claim back as working people in one of the richest countries and in the richest states in the world. The Declaration of Human Rights, Article 25, states that, quote, everyone has the right to a standard of living adequate for the health and well-being of himself and his family, including food, clothing, housing, and medical care, and the necessary social services, and the right to security in the event of unemployment, sickness, disability, widowhood, old age, or other lack of livelihood in circumstances beyond his control. And I'm here to say that our government is in violation of this Declaration of Human Rights. After years of fights against welfare cuts and the closing of hospitals in our community, we're beginning to do what it takes to build a social movement that does not represent merely a stay of execution for our people, but that represents a vision and a strength to fight for decent housing, education, jobs, and health care.
Our guest is Joyce Mills of the California Nurses Association and the Labor Party. Our topics are poverty, health, and hope. That, plus our featured commentary on today's edition of People's Tribune Radio. People's Tribune Radio is produced by the League of Revolutionaries for a New America, who also publish the newspaper People's Tribune, Tribuno del Pueblo. Stay tuned for contact and ordering information at the end of the program. Joyce Mills of the California Nurses Association and the Labor Party is a healthcare provider, a public health nurse who provides services to the poor and marginalized communities in Oakland, California. She addressed an audience in Chicago, Illinois, about her participation in the March for the Americas, which took place last year.
My name is Joyce Mills, and I'm a public health nurse. I do healthcare for the homeless program in the East Bay of California. I'm the mother of two boys, a long-term supporter of Women's Economic Agenda Project, and I'm speaking here on behalf of the California Nurses Association and the National Just Healthcare Campaign of the Labor Party. Some of us here were lucky enough to participate in the National March of the Americas that's been going on in the East Coast of this country. After days of walking through communities that look like battle zones in Beirut, we realize that to our brothers and sisters in Philadelphia or Camden, New Jersey, California is still seen as the quote-unquote dream state. Americans from the East and people from other countries still have the idea often that we have a better life, that we are immune here in California to the lack of jobs, the lack of housing, and poverty in general than in the rest of the world. If they read a recent Fortune magazine article about Oakland, they think of us as part of the quote-unquote golden triangle that processes almost half of the state's foreign exports, and they know that California is the seventh largest economy in the world. They will hear that according to a recent study by the American Electronics Association, Oakland is one of California's top five cyber cities, and that we are California's gateway to business to global markets. So what's wrong with this picture? Those of us who participated in the march know the difference between the dream and reality of California. We know that while California leads the country in high technology development, it also leads the nation in contingency work, in day-only labor, in low wages, and in companies that do not provide health care for their employees. We know that for the vast majority of Californians, the tremendous economic and social potential of our state is not in our hands and is not being directed in such a way to guarantee the standard of life that is the promise of this development. As a community nurse, I've been privileged over the years to know the intimate details of people's lives in times of crisis. And I'm always impressed by the overwhelming odds our people face. I know young women with new babies who are discharged from hospitals to shelters. I know men and women from Mexico or Kenya or Bosnia coming to California for a dream and finding our reality of devastated schools, of day labor, contingency jobs, and of no health care. And I know young boys forced onto the streets at the age of 9 and 10, dying from AIDS in their 20s, and that's not my dream. As a mother of two boys in the Oakland Public Schools, I've watched my sons struggle for their education alongside other children who are dropping out in the 7th and 8th grades, children who had straight A's in elementary school. And I've spent more time with their friends in high school, helping them cope with other kids' funerals and arrest histories than with marriages or graduations. And that is also no dream for me. I have known and been friends to colleagues who used to provide health care or social services to people forced to live in single-room occupancy hotels, only to lose their work in the competitive health care market and end up living in those same SROs. I've worked beside nurses who work 2 and 3 jobs because they carry the burden of supporting not only their own children, but their extended families, the only ones able to get a college degree and a decent living wage job. So why am I marching? Because I'm tired of the devastation and I don't believe in false dreams. We are here not because we believe in a dream, but because we believe in a vision of what we have to claim back as working people in one of the richest countries and in the richest states in the world. The Declaration of Human Rights, Article 25, states that, quote, everyone has the right to a standard of living adequate for the health and well-being of himself and his family, including food, clothing, housing, and medical care, and the necessary social services, and the right to security in the event of unemployment, sickness, disability, widowhood, old age, or other lack of livelihood in circumstances beyond his control. And I am here to say that our government is in violation of this Declaration of Human Rights. After years of fights against welfare cuts and the closing of hospitals in our community, we're beginning to do what it takes to build a social movement that does not represent merely a stay of execution for our people, but that represents a vision and a strength to fight for decent housing, education, jobs, and health care. At the California Nurses Association, we're fighting forward, not backward. We are, alongside fellow community members and organizations, helping to launch the Just Health Care campaign to guarantee a national system that can provide comprehensive health care to every resident in this country from birth to death. And we're doing this as a part of a new politics that's not the politics of begging, but the politics of a working class program. A politics that can take the Declaration of Human Rights and bring it on home. It's a politics that does not pose the fight for health care outside the fight for jobs, housing, and education. And it's a politics that says that the best preventive medicine is to guarantee a decent standard of life for every human being on this earth. It's a politics that says it's not individual leaders that determine our dreams, but collective vision on the part of those of us who know the reality that we face. This is not the end of any process, it is the beginning. And on the behalf of the California nurses and the Just Healthcare campaign of the Labor Party, I'm very glad to be here.
This is People's Tribune Radio. Lona's Sandy Reed spoke with Joyce Mills about some of the issues important in providing health care in today's environment and the Labor Party's Just Healthcare campaign.
You've been a nurse for over 20 years, and I know you've probably seen a lot of changes.
Well, I've been in healthcare in different positions for a long time. We've seen some amazing things over certainly my lifetime of work in the health sector. Certainly when I started working as a nurse and as a healthcare provider, we didn't have any of the tremendous developments of technology that we have today. We have the ability to extend life in a way that we never did when I was a child. One of the main things, though, that I've seen has been the growth in the number of people who don't have access even to the basic health care we could provide before that technology was available. Right now, I work in the community, and I also have worked as a district field nurse with just mothers and children coming home from the hospital, not necessarily just homeless people. The amazing thing to me is how little people have any access to doctors, any access to medical information, even at the same time that it's readily available on computers and in a way, people feel saturated with the amount of medical information, and at the same time, people have no access to the benefits. An example that really stands out for me is the current hepatitis C crisis. I mean, we have a situation where in some of the shelters that I work, it's estimated that 60 to 80% of the people are hepatitis C positive. And there have been huge debates in the past month in the Healthcare for the Homeless program about whether we should even be testing people for hepatitis C, because we have nowhere to send them for treatment if we find out they're positive. So the kind of ethical discussions that are going on is, you know, how can you find out if somebody's a positive if you can't refer them for treatment? So we won't even go through the process of letting them know. And this is similar to what took place to some degree in the early part of the AIDS crisis or HIV crisis. I think another thing that really stands out is the thing that people are talking about a lot. Tuberculosis has overpowered our ability as public health nurses to even take care of other patients at the same level that we can, because we just have so many very desperate active cases as well as very extensive investigations after these cases. The situation with tuberculosis, and again, this is a disease unlike hepatitis C or HIV that we can cure, that we do have the ability, at least until the thing becomes drug resistant, to cure. This disease, which we have the ability with very simple medication to cure, is overwhelming our caseloads.
And that is a disease of poverty, isn't it?
It's absolutely a disease of poverty, and many diseases are. Certainly the extent to which people become disabled and the kind of early death that people have from some diseases is a result of just not being able to get adequate medical care or to be able to avoid the worst aspects of illness. Certainly when I started out as a young person in nursing, we would never have thought we would be dealing with tuberculosis at this level. It just would never have occurred to us. We were getting the education that infectious diseases were finished, that all we were dealing with now was the development of the diseases of the wealthy and wealthy country and this kind of a thing. I think one of the things that's so clear is that the nurses that I work with complain that most of the time we have to spend guaranteeing people have enough housing, enough food, that their kids can get to school, that they have the basics of any kind of standard of health. And sometimes it feels like we're overwhelmed out there dealing with the situation. So a lot has happened.
One of the things to me that is the biggest crime, when you see that science has advanced so much in the field of medicine, for example, the new AIDS drugs that can really save lives, and yet people that don't have money are not able to even get these drugs, and so they die.
I think that that there's no question that people don't have access, even in this country, to the kind of treatments that we have available. And this is tricky stuff. I mean, not in the sense that we can't provide medication to people, but because these diseases require that you eat well, that you have a stable enough life, that you can take medication. Many of these medications you have to take many times a day. You have to time them around your eating. A lot of the problems that you can get with some kind of immune status problem, certainly HIV disease, comes from or can get much worse with a stress-related condition and being in positions where you can't protect yourself from other kinds of opportunistic infection. It requires constant contact, decision-making with people who respect you so that you can work with your doctor to make changes in your regimen based on your particular needs. It requires a very high level of human interaction with good scientific thinking and with some consciousness on the part of the individual for people to really get the kind of results that we can get with these diseases. And these things are just out of reach for people who cannot even find a place to lay their head. I mean, we have just a number of cases of people asthma, diabetes, these kinds of illness that are just absolute. I work in one, go to one shelter where there's children from 14 to 17, and every single one of these children has asthma. None of them are treated properly. None of them have a regular relationship with a doctor. This is the kind of situation that we find ourselves in.
Joyce, I wonder if you could tell us about the Labor Party's Just Healthcare campaign.
This is a campaign that we're really excited about. And the reason is not because the ideas behind a universal healthcare system are new. They're certainly operating in other countries as we speak. And we've certainly been in a long struggle in this country for true universal access to quality care. The thing that's exciting about this particular campaign is that it was the result, an agreement of the 1,400 delegates that attended the first constitutional convention of the Labor Party. And these delegates were delegates from unions from across the country representing a great number of other people, making this campaign not simply a campaign that is led by those of us in the healthcare system or those of us in the healthcare movement that have traditionally understood the significance and need for this, but this is really led by the vast majority of people in this country that are beginning to recognize that this is a critical quality of life issue. And we get to do it in the relationship to a program of the Labor Party. The program of the Labor Party has this as a main plank, but it also has very detailed discussion of what we want in this country for people's housing and education and jobs. And so it really does offer us an opportunity to look at this and present this as a holistic campaign for health, as a true preventative health campaign, both to guarantee that we can offer medical care and health care to people when they need it from birth to death, but also that we are constantly guaranteeing that the standard of living of our people goes up, which is the best thing that we can do to avoid illness in the country.
And where are you proposing that the money would come to fund the health care program?
The Labor Party has taken pains to develop the kind of a financing plan for this Labor Party campaign. There's no question that we have the money in this country to provide such a thing, that we've had the money for a long time. And, you know, this financing is detailed out in some of the documents with the campaign. But basically what it's looking at is, one, that we would be able to finance it through getting rid of the insurance companies, who at this point really represent an administrative addition that doesn't provide any kind of health care, but it's a huge section of our budget. And also it would really look at guaranteeing that the employers of this country do have to pay for health care. And at this point, there is the money for this. It does need to come from the people in this country who have the money, rather than looking at it as something that the society doesn't have to provide, and therefore you can get it if you can pay, you can't get it if you can't pay. The financing program is basically a program to guarantee that the money comes from where it sits and goes to the program. But this is something, I mean, it is not a difficult thing to do. We can pay for this, absolutely. The question is simply, you know, whether we want to do that. And so that's what we have to win the hearts and minds of the American people over to, is not only that it's possible, but that it has to be done. We have technologically speaking, and certainly in terms of general resources, one of the most great potential for healthcare systems in the world. People from around the world look to some of the developments, the medications, the technologies that we have. Unfortunately, and probably thankfully, they don't look at our delivery system as the system, although that's happening more and more. You know, countries such as Canada, other countries have been suffering a great deal by being inundated with this, the privatization, the kind of delivery system that we have here that is being exported to their countries. But there's no question that just from the standpoint of science and the standpoint of the potential, that we have a great thing here. I think we have some other things to learn from other parts of the world that have not had a system that's been so tied simply to making money. I mean, the problem that we have is that although pharmaceuticals can be great, there is no reason for the private profit motive to be so entrenched. So there, the abuses of the system, the abuses of the technology, really come from that technology and those pharmaceuticals not being developed in the interests of the social agenda, but being developed for private ownership. So we would need to do some things in this process to get the potential of the system out of it. But there's no question that that we have just the absolute tremendous possibilities of understanding health, of doing prevention, as well as providing care when people are sick.
In closing, I wondered if you could give your vision of the of what you would like to see in the new millennium.
What I'd like to see, and what I think is very possible to see, is a tremendous ability of the American people to recognize that we don't have to live this way. We don't have to live in a society that is polarized, where the polarization of wealth runs our lives, where we have to consider everything we do from the standpoint of a supposed scarcity, where we have to think about, where young people have to think about whether they ever are going to have a job, where people have to begin to accept a standard of living that they never thought they would have to accept. And that we begin, you know, in this country to really take a look at the fact that it's the majority of us that have the interest in guaranteeing that we have an agenda, that we have a program, and that we begin to develop the strength to get that program of working class people into a position where we can begin to demand, you know, not only the basics, you know, food, shelter, housing, and clothing, and so forth, but also our own intellectual development, our own ability to expand scientifically, to expand in terms of our ability to care for each other, and really begin to examine the better things that we all knew we wanted when we were growing up.
Many of the guests you hear on People's Tribune Radio are available as speakers for college campus and other events. You can contact Lerner's Speakers Bureau at 1-800-691-6888. This is People's Tribune Radio. And now, our featured monthly commentary, an editorial from the pages of the People's Tribune, Tribuno del Pueblo. We salute the organizers, supporters, and participants in the recently completed March of the Americas. They attracted support from many quarters, including from an international cavalcade of musicians, actors, and other artists. Their demand, presented to the United Nations in New York City, was that the suffering of the world's poor be stopped once and for all. This march, which brought together hundreds of poor people and supporters from the U.S., Canada, Latin America, the Caribbean, and elsewhere, was historic in its implications. It represented a major step forward in the process of consolidating a global struggle of the new class of poor that is being created in every country. The March of the Americas symbolized the breaking of the national barriers between the world's poor. The march demonstrated that the new class of poor being created by capitalism in the electronic age is one global class with a common global enemy, a capitalist class and a capitalist system that offers them no future. In its constant search for new markets and cheap labor, capitalism has tied the world together, creating a truly global market for both goods and labor. The advent of the computer and the robot, which dramatically cheapened communications and transportation, has made this globalization of capitalism both necessary and possible. At the same time, production with computers and robots is replacing labor worldwide. This combination of globalization and electronics means workers around the world are forced to compete with one another and with electronic production. The result? The workers' standards of living are being driven down worldwide, and a new social class of poor and destitute people is being created. This new class includes the homeless, the unemployed, the low-wage worker, and the temporary part-time and seasonal workers. On the one side stands a tiny global class of billionaires determined to preserve the capitalist system, and on the other side stands the new poor, who have been pushed out of the system and no longer have any reason to support it. The new poor tell some version of the same story, no matter what language they tell it in. They are stripped of their rights and denied food, medical care, housing, denied the most basic necessities of life. Historically speaking, the demand of this new class of poor is that a government and a society be constructed that takes care of them, that guarantees their ability to lead full, cultured human lives. They can settle for nothing less. They are the driving force of a worldwide movement to end all forms of poverty and oppression. Their goals can only be realized by demolishing the capitalist system. Capitalist globalization and the growing polarity of wealth and poverty are offering all of us a stark choice. Either accept global poverty and exploitation or make a global fight for a new world. One thing the march made clear is that there is a growing worldwide recognition of the possibility of building a new world. People don't protest against things they can't change. We have the means to end poverty once and for all. Just look at agriculture. In 1820, more than 70% of the U.S. labor force worked in agriculture. Today, less than 3% of the workforce is employed in agriculture, and yet we are producing more food than ever before. In 1850, a single farm worker produced enough food to feed 4 people. Today, in the U.S., thanks to technological advances, the labor of a single farmer feeds more than 78 people. And it has been said that the land mass of the United States alone could produce enough food to feed the entire world. Why should anyone, anywhere, be allowed to go hungry? The global capitalists have institutions to carry out their will on the world stage: the WTO, the IMF, the World Bank, NATO, and the United Nations. Through these mechanisms, they have imposed their program of lowering wages, cutting welfare, education, and healthcare, and economically or militarily crushing any opposition. As the March of the Americas proved, the global poor have begun building their own institutions of struggle. They have begun to globalize the fight for a new world, a world without poverty, without oppression, without exploitation. We can have that world if we have the courage to envision it and the will to fight for it. That's it for this edition of People's Tribune Radio. The program is produced by the League of Revolutionaries for a New America. Lerna advocates for a society and economy based on cooperation, not competition. The new technologies of electronics, robotics, and computerization make the creation of such a society no longer just a utopian dream, but a reality. Lerna believes that when the people, not a handful of trans-global capitalists, control these technologies, a world of abundance is possible. If you'd like more information about the League, our Speakers Bureau, and our print or audio publications, you can contact us at 1-800-691-6888. 1-800-691-6888. My name's Mike Thornton. On behalf of Sandy Reed and the League of Revolutionaries for a New America, we invite you to join us next time for another edition of People's Tribune Radio.